All right, all right. Let's make it happen. Here we are on the Bipolar Bear Podcast. With yours truly, Garrett Michael Conklin. Ooh, that sounds so cool like that. Hey, so let me start this off by saying, check this out. I got this new thing from Teletone Audio called Postcard Piano. Ooh, I've been kind of putting it off, but here, check out a little sample of how slick this thing sounds. Listen, listen, ready? Here we go. Now you guys know I do lo-fi, right? Oh, it sounds so good, doesn't it? So pretty. Thank you so much. Sexual chocolate. Don't they play so beautifully? Ooh, that's nice. So that was live, right? That was cool. That thing sounds sick. It's like, it's a contact instrument. So if, I don't know if you do anything with music, but if you do, it's a contact, a native instruments contact plugin. So it works with the free contact player, which is really nice. But wow, that thing sounds slick, right? That is going to be in some of my upcoming lo-fi beats tunes. I haven't written one in a while, but it's nice because it's fun to pick up new instruments like that that give you a sense of inspiration just based on their sound. And they have some really, there's this other one that they have called Scarbo, and it looks, it was more expensive, so I didn't get that one. I wanted the piano one's going to be way more useful for me anyway, for the lo-fi stuff and the horn stuff. But man, they had some really good stuff in their synth called Scarbo. So anyway, that was pretty cool. I thought that was a fun little segue there for you, right? So I touched on this the other, like in some other episode, but I wanted to kind of go back to it and review dynamic perspective. I don't know if that's a phrase that I coined or I stole it from somebody else. I don't know, but I like to consider things. And I've been thinking that way dynamically for a long time. I remember talking to people at Yahoo about this, and that's really where it came from. It came from really working on the project that I started there called YView. And it was a utility that I built that was an alert aggregate that would take in whole disparities of alerts from computer systems, from servers. And instead of giving you like all the alerts individually, it would come up with a determination of what was actually going wrong and try to point you to the root cause. So like if you had a database that had a shard down or had an Redis had an indice down or something like that, instead of going, oh, look, there's 1,000 web servers that are alerting or 1,000 Nginx servers that are alerting. Yeah, they're all alerting, but restarting them is going to do nothing because you have something broken on the backside, on the back end. So it helped with that. But what it enabled me to do was really dig deep and dive very deep and far down the hole of perspective and the perception of time. Because as I started to look at this, I'm like, well, everybody talks about take a proactive approach, right? It's like, well, I mean, we haven't gotten to a point where we can accurately predict the future, right? Weather's a perfect example of that. We can analyze it, look at all the data, look at what happened this time last year, regression, all that kind of stuff. And still, it's going to be dynamic and do whatever the hell it does. And we might say, yeah, it's going to rain and then it doesn't rain at all. Or no, it's going to be a clear day and it's just torrential downpours. You know, all that kind of stuff is flawed, right? We can't see the future. We cannot predict these things. We don't have enough granularity to understand or have not seen the patterns that reveal themselves in a way or in a manner that we can look at that and go, oh yeah, this is exactly what's going to happen next. We're not there yet. So what's the next logical step you would take in terms of being reactive to something? So you start to think naturally about perception, right? So as a human being, and I think I've said this before, we have 5 senses, right? Sight, sound, touch, feel, taste, right? So in this case, not all of that matters, but for the sake of argument, we have 5 senses, right? We have 5 mechanisms by which we can interpret the world that's going on around us. So perception is a really important thing for human beings, right? And if you look at it from a technological standpoint, perception is just another data point. really, right? So if a human being can't perceive something, so if you have thresholds, right? Let's define a threshold. Let's say a human being is not able to experience something that happens in less than 1 second's duration of time, which is, generally speaking, that's probably accurate. Then anything that you do from a reactive standpoint that takes place underneath that threshold is in fact imperceptible, meaning it doesn't actually happen. Therefore, it gives the illusion of proaction from a reactive position. That's what I worked on. maybe you get that, maybe you don't. I don't think it's that hard of a concept to get. It's just understanding that computers work in milliseconds. So to have them do something in a time frame underneath a second is kind of like an eternity. It's a lot of time. So all you really had to determine at that point was what the remediation would be, understand the scale, and then take the action. And in some cases, it wasn't always a fully automated process. But what it made me start thinking about applying the core principle or concept to is human beings, right? So like as a person, if you have dynamic, and I call that dynamic perspective. Well, I called it a bunch of other shit too, but for sake of argument, I dynamic perspective was a part of that whole scenario. And what that means is part of the engine that this thing needed to have was for the correlation piece, it needed to have different perspectives. It had to be able to look at an entire stack. It had to be able to look at an entire network. It had to be able to understand different systems like, hey, this system's reporting an outage for this particular stack, and that particular stack, we leverage a component on that stack, so therefore we might be having an outage because they're having an outage. That kind of stuff that's not as obvious. So the dynamic perspective scenario came into play for me from a human being interaction standpoint in that you have to be dynamic in your approach to things, right? You have to always look at things, and this is not easy to do, but you have to try to look at things from varying perspectives or dynamic perspectives, right? So if I'm talking to someone and the message that I'm trying to convey is coming from my perspective, arguably static, I have to be dynamic in understanding what they might interpret what I'm saying to be. Because it may not be interpreted the way that I intend it based on not looking at things dynamically. So if I just evaluate a situation and don't look at all the facts and all the information that's available to me, then I'm probably not making the best decision. Therefore, my actions may not solve the problem. So I think it's really important that we approach things dynamically, but it's pretty hard to do. And I used to explain it to people by saying, walk up to the wall and put your face where your nose is just a nose hair a length away from the wall. Now you have extreme granularity with what's directly in front of you. You have, all kinds of information about what's directly in front of you, but you basically no longer have a peripheral vision. All you can see is what's right in front of you. And there are times when that is what you need to be. Directly inside the problem, looking at it, trying to solve it, up close and personal, deep dives, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, if you never leave that perspective and don't step back an infinite number of increments, you're never going to see all the detail that surrounds the problem that you're so focused on. And then realize, is it really a problem? It depends. What perspective from which you're looking at the problem determines if it's even a problem, because from far enough away, it's not, right? Like if you explode a nuclear bomb on this planet, roughly 20 miles in diameter are in big trouble. But if you're at the moon, distance away from it, it really doesn't even matter. You might only see like a poof of cloud smoke, from the explosion, but it may have zero impact or consequence on the moon. So again, perspective, you got to look at all the different ways in which you can interpret something, or some more importantly, the ways in which someone else can interpret something when you're talking to them. And it's really hard. At least for me, this is not an easy thing to do because you're always thinking of the different scenarios that might be playing out from the way that you said something to someone, from the lack of context they may have, from the curt or shortness in which the brevity in which you delivered the message. again, lack of context around the larger problem. Like, I deal with this kind of on a daily basis right now, where people feel left out of conversations and feel as if their input is not being properly taken into consideration. And that's actually not the case. It's just they're not physically in some of the meetings, so they don't know what's taking place. So of course, we always, for whatever reason, by default, most people will walk down the road that kind of leads to despair, unfortunately, rather than optimism and prosperity. You know, you'll immediately think that, oh, I'm not being included. They don't like me. They don't think my opinion matters. They're not listening to me, blah, blah, blah. This place sucks. When in reality, that could be, you know, no further from the truth. And in fact, we are talking about your ideas and directly attributing them to you. You just happen to not be in the meeting, simply because it's not positionally adequate or required for you to be there, you know, in a leadership meeting that's for someone that's an engineer, for example. So very interesting stuff, but I think it's important, you know, and typically I don't get to these kind of moral of the podcasts until way down at the end. So today's a bit of a conundrum, word of the day, conundrum. But what I'm getting at is that, you know, typically I don't get to these strategic or useful components of the podcast until 30 minutes of rambling, but I've had tons of meetings this morning, so I'm kind of like in a focused mode. So a lot of this stuff is kind of just rolling off my tongue. But it's important that you be aware of these. I just think that it's important. It's an important thing. I use it a lot in the way I analyze things and think about things, but it's a lot of work. And that's the other thing I've been trying to help people understand is that, you know, we can say all we want about things and you can talk till you're blue in the face, but you actually then have to go execute to what you spoke about or spoke to. You can't just say the words and then magically things are going to happen and then you haven't done anything to actually instigate new action or new behaviors. So it's at least at minimal equally important that you take action and execute as it is to, you know, even have a discussion at all on any kind of topic. It's so important that you don't walk away from it with, yep, we're done. We just talked about it. No, man, you're not done. You just started. You started the conversation, you came to consensus, and hopefully you had some actionable items that came out of it. So I guess the moral of the story is try to think of things from a dynamic and approach things from a dynamic perspective, not only from your perspective. Think about what other people are thinking about and possibly what they might be considering and where they might be. You can get a lot of that. It's arguably a lot easier to do that in person, I'll say, and I'll admit to that, than it is from a remote perspective. But, you know, if you talk to someone enough, you can kind of get that from them too, even if you're not physically in front of them. So I think that's a really key element to, you know, conducting yourself in a meaningful way each and every day. And you can apply that to both personal and professional circumstances and situations. It doesn't have to be constrained to one or the other, but it's important to kind of think about that. And again, like I said, it's a lot more work to do that, but I think the results that you get from doing that are worth the effort that you're putting forth to achieve those results, because otherwise you may not be really realizing any results at all. And that's what I was finding, is that I'm like, wow, what am I doing wrong that's not allowing me to flesh these situations out in a way that makes sense? So I've had to go and be a little more verbose, which is frightening coming from me, right? I mean, I'm about as verbose as you can get anyway. So the thought of me becoming more verbose is almost terrifying, but more verbose in a more meaningful way. So not just rambling on about things like I often do, but speaking meaningfully and giving people direction and expectation and actionable items. It's so important to walk away from any conversation or meeting with people and have actionable items that come out of it. And I don't mean that, you know, a meeting that you have no actionable items was meaningless. I don't mean that. Could be the case, but I don't mean it in that strict of a case. I mean that it's important that when you meet with someone, you validate the meeting by having actionable items that needed to come out of the meeting, right? So if you can solve the problem on your own, perhaps just solve the problem on your own. If you can't solve the problem on your own, or you need a group to come to consensus on a problem, then get together with the group. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is taken right out of the EOS handbook. That's an IDS section criteria. You need to, if you can solve the problem on your own, just shut up and solve it. If you cannot, create an IDS issue and get together with a group of peers and solve the problem together. Yay. Okay, enough about that stuff. I also wanted to address one other thing today that I've been bringing up a lot lately, and I don't mean it to be self-deprecating in any way. I just, look, I have depression, man. I mean, I'm not a real happy-go-lucky kind of dude. So I'm kind of negative in my approach to a lot of things and the way I perceive things, unfortunately. But when I say nothing special, I don't mean, you know, like you're not special as in people in general are not. We're all very unique and individual, and there's only one of us out there, no doubt about it. What I'm trying to kind of get to on that is not that I'm not special, but what I mean is that the things that I say or the things that I do, I had to come to terms with the fact that they may not be outstanding. I hope that makes sense. I mean, I'm trying to make it make sense to myself, but this is what I mean by that. It's not that, you know, everybody's a drone and we're like the Borg and, you know, it's a one collective hive mind. I mean that, unfortunately, not everything, or maybe fortunately, depending on your dynamic perspective. Anyway, depending on, you know, luck of the draw, I mean, timing, there's so many things that go into it, but not everyone is special. And that's totally fine. Not everyone is going to do something that's going to change the world or change the lives of people around them or even change their own life. But it's not to say that your life is meaningless if the things that you're trying to accomplish never get accomplished. I think there's got to be something said for the effort that's put forth in trying to achieve those goals, right? Simply going for something is more than not trying at all, right? I mean, you may get on a bicycle and try to do like an aerial on a quarter pipe or something and fall and crash, but at least you tried. And most things for human beings are trial and error. You have to keep on going. And a lot of what ends up being the things that land us in positions of success and you know, winning positions are the perseverance and the ability to keep on trying over and over and over. Not even in so much as having the talent, the raw talent. Of course, that's important. Of course, that's important. I don't mean to diminish that by any means. You have to, let's say you want to be a singer. If you can't sing, it's going to be awfully hard. But we could also argue that there are plenty of famous people that are not great singers that are wildly successful. That's a fact. You know, I mean, if you look, here's a perfect example. If you look at someone like Ariana Grande and Britney Spears, and she's just top of mind because she's been in the news a lot lately. And this is no disrespect to Britney Spears, but she was wildly successful in her heyday. Yet she's not really that, she's not a bad singer. I'm not saying she's bad. She is nowhere near the skill of Ariana Grande, right? That girl is just naturally crazy gifted in her ability to sing, has like some absurd octave range, can sing just so amazingly. And yet their success is, you know, I don't know what it is, but I would guess it's probably pretty close. So there's definitely an argument for both sides of that. But I don't like to pin myself on the fact that, well, just because you're talented, that's why you made it. And I'm not talented. And that's not why I didn't make it. Green Day had a great quote, and I'm not quoting, I'm paraphrasing. They had a great comment that they made. And it was that it wasn't that we were better than all the other bands. It was that we didn't turn down any gig. They played anything and everything from backyards to basements to clubs to any show. Didn't matter if they got paid. And in the end, look what happened. You know, I think they're from San Francisco. So there was, you know, a huge talent pool there. There wasn't some like, you know, middle of nowhere place like Iowa from where Slipknot's from, where it's like, yeah, they were probably like the only big thing that ever came out of there in the metal scene anyway. You know, there was a lot of bands in San Francisco. That's not some nowhere land, you know? So for them to have made it through, self-admittedly not being the best there was, just playing over and over and doing every show, everything that came down their path, whether they got paid or not, is in their opinion why they got where they got. And I would argue that their talent flourished because of that, because think of how much they probably played, right? If you're playing a show every night, you're going to get pretty damn good at playing live and playing your songs and play, you know, running around the stage and having great showmanship and all that stuff is going to naturally get so much better because you're doing it all the time. That's one of the reasons jazz musicians are so phenomenal is because it's you play like 3-hour sets 4 or 5 nights a week. So, I mean, can you imagine that kind of practice for over years of time? You know, because Green Day didn't just come out of the gate and just become super famous. It was years of time. So by the time that they got noticed and exposed to the world, they were already awesome. Same with jazz musicians. It's like, you know, they start off as one of the top level musicians anyway, either through natural talent or through education and training, you know, from a classical standpoint. But then now you're playing all the friggin' time. I mean, I'm a perfect poster child for that. I played in wind ensemble, you know, and in bands and stuff when I was a kid every day for probably 10 years. It was 5 days a week. And then a couple days of practice on the weekends to learn your parts and get better and keep your lips in shape and all that stuff. So doing that for 10 years, I dropped and put the trumpet down for almost 30 years and came back to it. And honestly, it took about 2 weeks for me to get my chops back. And then I was at the same exact level of playing as I was when I stopped 30 years earlier. So there's a lot to be said for that repetitive kind of persistent going after it mentality that really can get you where you want to be. And that's, you know, I mean, I started doing these podcasts a while back. Here's another good example. And, you know, you could argue now that, yes, I've changed equipment and I've got better technology working with me here, but I've evolved and gotten so much better at this than I was when I first started. I had no idea what to even talk about initially. And I'm a complete windbag. So it's not like there was for lack of topic or subject matter for me to draw on. It was just, I didn't know how to do it and I didn't feel comfortable doing it. And it was awkward and weird. And these things went nowhere. And it was just like 5 minutes in, I'm like, what am I even saying? This is so dumb. I'm just going to stop doing it. And I persevered through it and it's been probably about a year. And now I'm at I'm not like successful doing this. I'm not saying that, but I'm far better at doing this. Right? I haven't reached a level of financial success in doing this. So let's be clear about that. But I think my delivery, my sound quality, the performance, the whole thing is so much better. And it's only because I've been doing it a whole bunch more. Right? This isn't scripted at all. This is just me talking. I'm just rambling on about things that I feel like talking about. So if you don't have a lot of kind of practice in doing that, it's going to really come off very bumpy and not very, there's not going to be a flow to it. And I think that I've developed as I listen to these over, you know, I listen to all these podcasts at least once just so I can get what the heck did I even say in this one, you know, and try to learn and extrapolate information for myself. You can hear me getting manic now, can't you? I get kind of rolling. But, you know, I've gotten much better at apps actually doing these just from doing them, even though no one's listening. And that is my argument to a T, is that hone your craft while nobody gives a shit. Because if this thing were to ever blow up, at least at this point, if it were to start to get tons and tons of followers, it wouldn't sound like a total pile of shit. It actually sounds pretty good. And it sounds like I have something to say. And in fact, in some cases, I do have a lot of good things to say that might be helpful to people. Whereas if you're just starting out and then magically or by luck or happenstance that something happens and you go viral and all of a sudden you're huge, what do you really have to offer? But the same, you know, it may not be the same experience. So I'm look at this as building my back catalog so that at some point when I do reach a point, you know, hopefully in my mind where this becomes, you know, I get like 10,000 listeners, that would be wildly successful for me. But when I reach that point, notice how I said when, not if, when I reach that point, I'll have hundreds and hundreds of episodes in my back catalog that people can go listen to. So it's not like you're going to discover me and go, oh God, this guy's got 3 episodes. No, I've got, I think almost, yeah, I have at least 70, well, I've got well over 100, but I've got at least 75 that I've been counting since I started actually titling and counting the podcasts. I have, this is season 2, episode 75, I believe is where we're at today. So I've got at least 75 episodes that are worth listening to that you can go back and listen and it's amazing. So my audience, every time I do this, I'm building stuff for new people that find this podcast and want to listen to it. And then go, oh, I'm enjoying listening to this clown. Let me go back and listen to some other ones. And I've noticed that on my Anchor stats chart that if I look at that, I can see that, yeah, there are people that are going through my back catalog and listening to older podcasts. It's not just the latest and greatest. It's what else has this guy got out there? So that tells me that at least something I'm doing, whether it's the sound of my voice or the flow and the delivery of what I'm saying, even if it's not what I'm saying, it's some part of this is helping somebody and some people enough to where the majority of people actually listen to these entire podcasts. I don't get like a 5 minute and then they drop off. It's the whole thing. So that's even more reassuring. But I think that it speaks volumes in the sense that you have to persevere, and there's really no way to all of a sudden snap your fingers and you're amazing at podcasting. It's just not a realistic expectation. It's going to take time for you to get better at these things and to be good at it and sound like a professional. Not that you need this to be professional, but there's definitely a difference between someone that's not really been doing this very long and someone that's been doing it for a long period of time. Like Joe Rogan is, I use him as an example, and it's terrible because he's, of course, the epitome of all podcasting. But I mean, when you listen to that guy speak, he's very fluid, very elegant, very, he doesn't trip over himself, even when he's baked out of his mind or drunk. I mean, he's just done so many, you know, a couple thousand episodes probably at this point over a 10-year period. Yeah. I mean, imagine how good he is at this. You know, that's what I'm saying though. You got to put the time in and put the work in. There's just no way around that. And that was, you know, to my earlier point, is what I'm saying is that, you know, when I say things to the people that work with me and work for me and things like that, it's not about just saying what the words that are coming out of my mouth. It's about now what do we do next as actionable items to in fact make what we're talking about turn into reality, right? It's no different than an idea you have in your head. It'll always and forever be in your head until you turn it into something tangible in the real world. But everything starts in everybody's head. At least that's the way it feels from the human condition. I don't know if that's actually true, but that's what it feels like. So what you really have to do is do the work. And that's not something that's not been stated a million times before by, you know, slogans and other people and many other people that are wildly successful is, you know, do the work. You actually have to do the work. That's the biggest conundrum. Word of the day. I'm not sure if I said the word of the day already today, but anyway, biggest conundrum is people want to talk about stuff and then not actually put in the work that it is required to implement what they talked about and make that become a reality. So it's so important that you take what you say and think and then actually go do it. So if you're having meetings or discussions or get-togethers or whatever, it's always a good idea to have a takeaway from those meetings. So they don't just become like a talking session and then you walk away going, yeah, we talked about it and that's the end of it. No, you talked about it and here's a whole bunch of, you know, things that we need to do now that came out of this conversation and this dialogue that now need to go get, and, you know, you need to go get after it and get it done. So I think that's probably one of the most challenging components of, well, execution is the thing, man. I mean, it's all about execution. If you don't do anything, then nothing is going to happen. You can have great ideas and wonderful thoughts, and they'll just never manifest into anything meaningful unless you take action and put them into place. So I think that's a real, I don't know, I think that was a really good overview of what you need to do here, people. Stick with it, persevere, make it happen. I'm doing it. I mean, you know, for the handful of people that listen to this podcast, maybe a year from now, if it, you know, moves to a different level, it'll be interesting to look back on these episodes and be like, wow, yeah, this is when I had a very small following and now it's grown into something more, or maybe it won't have grown at all. But I can only imagine that I'll be so much better than I am today, a year from now, or even 6 months from now. I think it'll be a much better, you know, delivery, better flow, perhaps better content, better topics. I mean, obviously you want to have better content. That's the key to this whole thing. Being successful is having something that somebody wants to listen to and then being able to execute it in a way that people enjoy listening. That's what keeps you coming back for more. But anyway, you know what? That's all I've got for today. We'll keep it short and sweet today. I know I like to go pretty long on these things, but you know, no reason to just ramble on for the sake of rambling on. So as always, thanks for listening. It's a pleasure. It's my pleasure to be able to do this. And I feel fortunate that, you know, I have some cool technology and I'm able to make a nice sounding podcast, whether you like the content or not. So with that, have a good day. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.